We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bowe. We are both editors over at MavsMoneyBall.com. We are coming to you a little bit before midnight on Wednesday, May 1st. The Dallas Mavericks just handed the Los Angeles Clippers their worst playoff defeat in their franchise's bizarre history, 123-99. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Glad that even though that was a 9 o'clock game, I feel like it kind of had a brisk pace to it.
Yeah.
And if we're going to stay up late and talk about the Mavericks, I'd rather talk about a win. I don't know about you. And that was a pretty, that was a, as definitive a win you'll see in a game five with a series tied 2-2. I think you'll ever see. I can't remember a lot of series I've seen in my time when it's tied 2-2 and game five is a, I mean, this was a no doubter. I mean, if people were worried about the Mavericks' disposition coming into this game after getting down by 31 in game four, and then you expend all this energy, both physical and emotional, to get back into that game, and then you lose, you basically make that big comeback and then kind of fall flat in the final minutes. People were wondering, okay, well, how are they going to come out and how are they going to respond? Well, don't have many questions about their response. That was dominance from the team.
And there's a lot of different ways we could talk about this game. And I think the right way to talk about this one is to talk about how the Mavericks started. Because how the Mavericks started the game ended up being really emblematic of the way that they finished it, and that the roles were reversed, at least for me early on, with Kyrie Irving coming out and getting the first shot of the game, a nice little lefty running floater. I mean, Kyrie Irving had only 14 points and 6 assists, but he was utterly instrumental in this game where he, you know, it was very weird to hear Charles Barkley after the game, like, constantly refer to Luka needing to push the pace more. And it's like, Luka pushed the pace all game, but he did that following Kyrie Irving's lead, because Kyrie Irving pressed early. He found PJ for a dunk on the second Mavericks possession of the game. And from that point on, the Mavericks just played at a different speed. You know, there was so much. The first quarter was really one filled with kind of like an obnoxious level of consternation. The Mavericks, I think, were 1 of 10 from three in the first quarter.
They were.
And the thing about that, though, was the looks were good. It's just they're not going down. And that sort of, you know, that continued for the series. I can't even remember. I don't have my box score pulled up. What did the Mavericks shoot from three for the whole game?
14 of 39, so right about 36%.
Pretty awesome. So, yeah, they rebounded in a big way, largely due to, like, Maxi Kleber and, like, everybody that you didn't think that would hit threes. And we'll circle back to that. But it was just sort of a tense game. The Mavericks ended up leading the Clippers 25-24. Clippers only went 3 of 8 from 3 with Zubac once again scoring, like, half the points. He had 8 points in the quarter. And it's like, God, are we going to be dealing with this again? The second quarter was interesting because the Mavericks just sort of slowly worked themselves ahead. Daniel Gafford went to the line 6 times in the period, and I thought that was sort of emblematic of the way the Mavericks forced the issue. What did you think about that second quarter? Because by the end of the second quarter, you could feel an avalanche coming, but it wasn't entirely evident until the start of the third.
Yeah, the second quarter to me, you're right about Daniel Gafford getting 6 free throw attempts, kind of showing what they were doing. They were just kind of relentless in their attacking of the paint. And then James Harden and Paul George combined for 6 points in the second quarter. They combined to go 2 of 5 from the floor. George only took 1 shot and had 2 free throws in the second quarter. That was, to me, that's the story, because that's game 4. They were incredible. They couldn't miss a shot. And game five in the second quarter, I mean, nothing. I thought it was very funny that Harden missed every single floater tonight. definitely some better contests, but also just kind of playing the odds a little bit. He wasn't going to make those floaters. Like, it was just funny how that worked out. I also thought it was interesting in the second quarter because they didn't go to Maxi as a small ball 5. And usually you're going to see most of a team's rotations by the end of the first half, unless they got to really mix things up in the second half if you're trailing. They never did Maxi small ball 5, and he never came out in the second half either, I don't believe, unless I missed a stretch. So it was pretty evident that the Mavericks determined after game 4, we're going to play big. You know, we're going to get back to kind of what we were doing in game 3, which is we're going to manhandle. I mean, that's kind of what they did. They manhandled the Clippers, and that started in the second quarter. Clippers did not shoot well from 3 at all. Mm-hmm. Everyone predicted they were probably going to cool off a little bit. And that's kind of their only out, because they cannot score in the paint in this series. And that started in the second quarter, and it kind of – the Mavericks carried that through. The Clippers shot 14 of 33 in the restricted area, 42%. Like – and that's been happening all series, even in games 1 and 4, that's been happening. They haven't been scoring efficiently in the paint. The Mavericks are walling off the paint. They're giving up some threes. Yes, they are giving up some floaters, but they're making the right bet. Like, we don't think you're going to win a game without being able to consistently score at the basket, which is like the most important shot in basketball, right? Like the best shot. Like, we're going to cut that off, and we're going to see how you respond. And then how they respond is the Clippers basically almost have to pray that they're going to hit 50% or more of their threes, and they shot 25%, and that's the game.
Well, and so you're watching in the second quarter, and the Mavericks inch ahead. They're ahead by 4 points. They're ahead by 6 points. They're ahead by 8 points. And then the play, which just should have – it was the coming of the four horsemen, essentially, where Kyrie Irving threw a 40-foot – alley-oop to a sprinting Daniel Gafford. It's really hard. Like I think unless you show someone that play, it's very hard to describe just how impossible that pass, catch, and dunk looked. And that was when I was like, oh, okay, something's coming here. Something's coming here in a big way. And then in the third quarter, you know, the Mavericks come out at a halftime, and the Clippers simply fell apart. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Mavericks had a lot to do with that, but the Clippers had 3 turnovers in the first 3 minutes of the third. The Mavericks didn't capitalize on that, and I initially took this out of my recap because I wrote the gamer for Mavs Moneyball tonight, that the Mavericks, I was a little concerned that the Mavericks didn't take advantage of those early turnovers, and then all of a sudden the Mavericks are up by 21 points. And the third quarter was where Luka exerted his will, and that was the most fun I've seen in terms of Luka attacking the middle of the floor in the rim. That we just haven't seen that in 20 games now. In some of those games, the Mavericks haven't needed it. and that's fine. But in these playoffs, you know, Luka shot he shot 42% or less in the previous four games. Tonight he was 14 of 26. I don't know how many two-pointers he made, but he was primarily doing a great job just getting inside. Now, he can still operate like a madman from 17 to 18 feet out. He still hit some crazy long two-point jumpers that were Dirk Nowitzki-ish. But he was really – I think he surprised the Clippers with how much he went to the rim. And there was at one point a stretch where I think he scored six straight, either through diving all the way to the rim or getting fouled. And the Clippers were just like at a loss because he hadn't done that yet all series. And I think part of that, and this is my opinion, part of that was, you know, Luka's knees not feeling right. Part of it is he doesn't always want to go down and get wrecked in the paint. It's a long game. It's a long series. He gets fouled every damn possession. And those bumps and bruises and that stuff, particularly from behind, are a little bit dangerous. And it's, you know, it's a physical game, and he's got to choose when to exert his will. But Luka has been one of the best paint finishers all year, and he wasn't finishing paint shots. So, like, this was bound, like, I don't want to say it was bound to happen because the Clippers had done a good job defending him, but he was just like, all right, fuck this. I'm getting inside and we're just going to see what you can do about it. And the answer is nothing.
Yeah. 14 points in the third. He was 5 of 8, only 1 of 2 from three. He was 2 of 2 at the rim, 2 of 4 in the paint away from the rim. The big thing, I mean, we talked about this almost, I feel like we've talked about this like every single game about Luka this series, is the shots in the paint are there for him, and he was kind of overpassing a little. And it was bizarre to see him pass out for threes when he was right at the basket. And it was a little bit of indecisiveness that, frankly, you never see, because he's the thing about Luka that, like, the definitive part to his game to me is he always seems to know where he wants to be, where he wants to go. I think you said it in game four, you're like, he's always one step ahead, and for the first time we've ever seen him in the playoffs, it's like he doesn't kind of know what to do next, and he feels like he's a step behind, which is just like totally rare. And yeah, this was the definitive game of him in the series. He got 35 points. He outscored Paul George and James Harden by himself. Mm-hmm. He only took 3 3-point attempts in the second half. He clearly looked at what they were doing, what the Clippers were doing defensively, with a little bit of the drop and then a little bit of Zubac playing up. And that's the thing we've been saying is, like, look, if Zubac's either playing in drop or he's playing up, the paint is there because you either get around him if he plays too far up, and then there's no rim protection behind you. There's, because the Clippers don't play anyone big besides their center. So there's that thing, and Luka took advantage of that. And then there's the drop. If he's in drop, floater range. And how good has Luka been in that floater range all season? Mm-hmm. And he finally took advantage of it. He finally flipped in some shots outside the restricted area, but in the paint. And it was clinical. And it was the first time Luka looked kind of like himself offensively, I think, this series. And credit to him that he's been doing other stuff. He's been passing. He's been playing defense before tonight. But yeah, this was definitely his definitive game. And by the way, he was playing great defense too. So, I mean, considering how he looked at times in game four with his knee and how he still looked at times tonight, like, it's not like he got over it in one game. Like, he was still laboring. I mean, the Clippers offense tonight was like, hey, let's pick on Luka, because they kind of, I think they saw
right.
the game four tape and were like, let's just do that more. And that didn't happen. Like,
no.
Luka was stonewalling both George and Harden.
And the commentator, you know, I don't really want to talk about the TNT guys too much, because it's like they're watching a different, it's like they're writing, they're reading off of a preordained script, and yes. they sort of have to stick to the script. And Reggie Miller, who by and large is kind of fun because he's very enthusiastic about basketball, but I like that. So I don't want to hate on him too much. But one of the things he's like, well, man, Luka's getting blown by James Harden. And it's sitting there going, say that again. Yes, Luka Doncic is getting blown by former MVP James Harden, only he wasn't really getting blown by. He was sort of sticking with him and was recovering. You know, he took a charge in the first quarter from Luka. Luka played really good defense in this game. You're right about it. And was active in so much as he can be. Like, yes, his mobility is still not great, but it was really something to watch. Like, and now between that, and you bring up another thing that I want to talk about with Luka, where I was really loving, he was getting the ball across half court with 19 to 20 seconds left in the shot clock. And those two extra seconds, a lot of people, you know, Iztok Franco, our former colleague, D Magazine writer, one time he pulled a bunch of stats on this. And you don't think that one or 2 seconds matters, but for where he ends up getting the ball, like sometimes he crosses the half court line, guys, with 16 seconds left. He was getting to the 3-point line with 19 seconds left. And the Clippers are not used to that. Everybody's used to Luka setting up and taking care of the defense is set because he's going to figure out how to punish you. And I've always found this very confusing, quite candidly. I know he's a little bigger and he doesn't want to run himself out of shape, but Luka going downhill, even from 90 feet away, causes the defense to go, oh, fuck. So I like it when he's doing this sort of thing because it, you know, even if the first pick and roll is not particularly successful, he's still making guys make decisions. And there was so much better early ball movement from the Mavericks in all elements tonight. You know, I mentioned Kyrie Irving plays a big part in that. Luka, I just thought that Luka did a great job with that. And he talked about it. He just needs to stick with it. It's a him problem. It's a him. He is in charge of it, essentially. And so I hope he continues with it as the playoffs go along. I was a little bit worried at elements of the third quarter and then like as the fourth quarter started because they were kind of milking the clock. But then they just kept punching the Clippers in the mouth. It was great.
Yeah, you talked about pushing the pace. While they did that, they still controlled the ball. They had 8 turnovers. Mm-hmm. The Clippers had 13, I think. I'm pretty sure the Mavericks have won every game. They've won the turnover battle, but don't quote me on that. I feel like games 1-4, they lost the turnover battle pretty bad. Kyrie and Luka combined for 16 assists and only 2 turnovers. Luka only had 2, and Kyrie had 0. Like, that's huge. Like, yeah. they were not only, like, increasing pace and controlling the ball better than you did in the previous game, in game 4, where they had, I don't know how many they had, but they had at least 10 turnovers. They had double-digit turnovers in that game. That's impressive. That's impressive to play with pace and then also control the ball. This felt like a game, like, it felt like everything they saw in game 4, like, they were prepared for this game. I don't know, you know, I know how we both feel about Jason Kidd and how we feel about the coaching staff, but, like, this was a game, like, it really felt like they took everything that happened to them in game 4 to heart, and they're like, let's not do that again. And slammed them. Like, it was pretty impressive to turn around. Like, they used those 2 days off pretty well. Because it feels like everything we talked about in game 4 that went wrong for them, like, they reversed that trend in a big way in this game 5.
Well, and you know, just I think we have to say this out loud. On our podcast, I don't think we were particularly critical of the coaching stuff. No, as the days wore on. As the days wore on, I raised some questions. I tweeted a lot. We wrote articles about it. Like, there are things that were brought up. Kid's inclination, the coaching staff's inclination to let James Harden shoot those floaters, to not get killed by those guys' threes, was correct.
Yeah.
It was correct. So
those guys shot 3 of 13 from 3, George and Harden tonight.
All right. I want to circle back on a couple of things. There's some things in the chat that I really do agree with, but it's time for us to take our momentary break in this. First of all, thank you guys for joining the show live. Those of you here watching on YouTube, if you could do me a favor, if you could go click the like button while you're down there, we would very much appreciate it if you would consider subscribing to our show. You can also get alerted for when we go live. I think if you set the subscribe, like if you click the subscribe button one more time, it gets you a notification for like when we go live every time. We go live after every game, Josh and I do, or at least one of us, and then another Mavs Moneyball staff member. Then during these playoff games, we're holding our every single game post game, secondary post game show where you can come participate if you are at all interested in that. I really have been enjoying both the group therapies and the Mavs parties. We will have one directly following this show tonight. Last but not least, I want to give a shout out to the fans here in the YouTube who are leaving Josh and I tips. We have Marco Grandi Blanche. So happy tonight, leaving us a tip and an amount I can't figure out because it's in a different symbol. Shout out to Marco, though. We very much appreciate you. Lewis Stevens says, Mavs are undefeated in the playoffs when Dwight Powell gets at least one rebound. Really, that's a statistic I can get behind. Appear now or appear later also leaves us a short tip saying, woo, great win. Let's go get game six. Very much appreciate those tips, guys. If you're listening on an audio stream, please consider leaving us a review, shooting me an email. We always want to know what you guys are thinking. This is a fan community that Josh and I are delighted to be a part of. Now I'm going to insert some audio ads. If you could listen to those, that'd be great. Otherwise, Josh and I will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, yeah, someone points out that Kirk, that's Euro. I should have known that was a Euro, but I didn't want to make a mistake. Like, I've seen some interesting symbols in here. I don't know where the super tip is. But I am grateful for those who are willing enough to find it. Okay, so there was it's a little bit difficult for me just with how I watch games. I usually need to watch the game like in the fast forwarded version again to know what elements of the defense really stood out. The one thing that stood out to me tonight was all of it. I don't even know where to begin with this Dallas defense. Like, Kyrie's defense for these past three games has been like he is in Harden's jockstrap, and it is annoying. He is bothered, and for a smaller guy, to him, for him not getting picked on and really being a plus defender is not something I would have predicted in this series. Really, really nice to see that. We already talked about Luka's defense. Like, what are the other defensive elements that really stand out to you?
Jones was pretty great. That was like an all defense performance from him. And I think there's been some talk about like, why is he on Paul George and not James Harden? Cause he's usually a little bit of a better point of attack defender. And I think the answer is like, if you can get away with Kyrie Gardner Harden, which he did tonight and did very well.
Yep.
Jones has been basically their lockdown guy. Like, we're going to put you on him and this guy won't score anymore. Obviously game four, that didn't happen. Harden and Paul George had out-of-body experiences and went nuts. But outside of game four, they haven't had huge games. Harden's had some pretty good games, but George hasn't. And if you can cut off one of those two guys and Kawhi isn't playing, they just don't have a lot of other offensive options. And I think another thing that really helps the Mavericks is, like, the best way to get Kyrie and Luka into trouble on defense is not really attacking them straight up with a live dribble. It's more attacking them with motion and movement and screens and trying to get them moving around the floor. And the Clippers just don't play that way.
Nope.
With Harden and George, it's a lot of single pick and roll isolation basketball. Like they're those two are just not getting run through the ringer off the ball because, you know, guys like Mann, Coffee.
That's not what the Clippers do.
They just don't do that. They rely on their star power, and those guys have held up pretty well in those isolated situations. So if the Clippers are content with their role players kind of standing and watching their stars, you're just giving the Mavericks more opportunities to let Kyrie and Luka play defense, because like that's their weakness. Like we've seen it, like a team like the Pacers, that's a team that Rick Carlisle motion offense with a lot of moving parts, that's what gets them into trouble, not kind of, you know, the ball watching star dominant game. It's just been pretty incredible to watch, and I think they made the bright bet. You know, I think coming out of game four, I think the big question was, okay, so far through four games, Maxey at the five is your best lineup for scoring, but Lively at the five is your best defensive lineup, but that lineup can't score. So it's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Are you going to try to manufacture stops with your Maxey at the five and rely on the offense? Or are you going to try to find a way to get some buckets with Lively at the five? Mm-hmm. Clearly the coaching staff chose the latter because Maxey didn't play five all night. And the Mavericks shot 54% from the floor. So they found ways to get buckets with Lively at the five. And if they're going to do that with the way Lively has been playing defense and with the way the team has been guarding with Lively at the five, I mean, this series is going to be over in six games. Like, if the Mavericks are going to get offense with Lively on the floor, I don't see how they lose. I know that sounds a little cocky or maybe a little arrogant, but just the way the series has been going, like, They've just been dominant defensive with Lively on the floor. Their Achilles heel with Lively has been, can they find buckets? And they found a lot of buckets.
Well, and frankly, give me more Lively offense. I want to see him make choices, because when he makes choices and they're confident ones, there was one play where he got stuck in the middle of the key and then he and Josh Green had a turnover. But beyond that, did he even get stuck with that turnover? Yeah, he did. He was really fun to watch on offense. I got into a debate with one of my followers who liked to tell me that and this is back at the end of the regular season, who tried to tell me that Lively got to make lots of decisions as the role man. And like, that's just not true. Luka serves him up for oops, but there have been instances where, you know, Lively averaged just under an assist per game in the regular season, but Lively has the ability to score out of that role, to pass out of the role, dribble, dunk. I wouldn't mind if they can fit. He just has really nice touch. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he develops like a weird little floater game at some point. Right now he's just trying to dunk everything, but I'm perfectly fine with those kind of attempts next to the rim. Seriously, because they're making the Clippers, you know, James Harden got the kid tried to call a challenge on in the first quarter, but James Harden got away with a flop right in front of the refs because his beard was sticking out because Lively goes up for a dunk. I just want to see Lively make these choices. I really enjoy just watching him make choices and evolve as a player during the year.
Yeah, he had that one bucket where he caught it at the free throw line, and like, it's smart, but he does the thing where when he catches it at the free throw line, when they send two on the ball on the pick and roll, and he pivots, and he very much clearly is like, okay, what's the floor balance like? Like, he's like, are there shooters? No. Okay, I'm going to the rim. Are there shooters in the corner? Yes, I'm passing it out. Like, very clinical. It doesn't feel like, it's almost like he's, you know, it's not super fast, but it's not like he's being slow or hesitant. He's just reading the floor, which is what you're supposed to do. You know, you don't want to make a play that's not there before you make it, if that makes sense.
Well, and rookie
like him,
I mean, you got Wembanyama in this rookie class, and he sort of skews the line a little bit with decision making, but we've watched a lot of Dallas bigs over the years. The Samuel Dalembert is not able to do shit if he catches the ball in the pick and roll, you know. it's just not happening. And the fact that Mavericks have Lively, who he didn't really get some of his float game to go down tonight, but I think against if the Mavericks were to play the Thunder, that's something that I would be interested in seeing. Like, there's the Mavericks just have a lot of optionality, and the Clippers have cut off a lot of that because of how they're built. And that's the point. That's what, you know, that's why we're kind of concerned about them as a defensive matchup. But you could just, you're starting to see the way, the force the Mavericks play with, both offense and really defensively, which leads to their offense, has they've broken through. They're starting to basically break the Clippers down. Like when PJ Tucker, who is quite literally my age, is on the floor, that's when you know, when you know what's going on.
When you're shooting 37% for the game and you're down 21 in the third quarter and your break glass in case of emergency idea is unearthing PJ Tucker,
who I thought was gooning, to be quite honest. Like I was worried he was gonna hurt somebody out there. Like he took a charge from Lively by sliding under Lively when Lively was in the air. I hate that shit.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a desperation play that did not work at all. He was a minus 10 in 10 minutes. But yeah, I've talked about it before, but like just look at the steals and the blocks for both teams after every one of these games, especially the one the Mavericks win. The Mavericks had 11 combined steals and blocks. The Clippers had 4. Like the Mavericks are just an athletically, physically superior team. And the only way the Clippers have won 2 games. They've hit 65% of their threes in those 2 wins.
Yep.
Like that's the only way they can win. They can't win any other way. They have to bomb from 3. If they don't bomb from 3, they have no, like, what's their pivot? Because they can't.
Well, I mean, let's be clear here. They have the shooters to do this. Like, this is a real, what's ridiculous about this, if I'm being honest, is it's a bit of a role reversal to the 2021 series. Right. Where the Mavericks, like Tim Hardaway and the Mavericks, shot a gajillion percent. I mean, they got up 2-0. They were up 5. They were up 3-2 heading into game 6. And game 6 was the one where Kawhi took our souls. This is just, it's a different type. So, I mean, I'm looking through the box score, and you could really go through and have something to say about everybody. We've not touched near enough on Maxi Kleber's back-breaking 3-point shooting in the second quarter. He went, I think, 4 of 5 in that quarter. 3 in the opening, like, when do you, 4 minutes.
When do you think the last time that dude scored 12 points in a quarter?
I don't know. I mean, there's a pretty, I don't know if you saw this absolutely bonkers stat. Maxi Kleber, 15 points, 5 of 7 from 3, plus 17. Only Luka has more playoff games with 5 plus 3s in Mavericks history. Not Dirk.
No way.
Maxi Kleber. This is from StatMuse.
That is an insane stat. I almost don't want to believe it.
I can't. I mean, I'm going to.
Not Jason Terry? It's Luka and Maxi?
That feels weird.
Doesn't that feel weird?
I mean, but it's more games with 5 plus 3s. Yeah. So that's got to be. I mean, StatMuse wouldn't have tweeted that out, right?
No, I know. I'm flabbergasted.
It feels wrong. It feels like dirty.
I can kind of buy it on Dirk because in the playoffs, you know, in that era, he was the mid-range post-up machine. So, but Terry, like that's crazy. That's a crazy.
Sure. Well, then I don't know. We might have to look into that one.
But either way.
But he had an incredible game and was really. I mean, didn't he do this against Utah in one of the games?
He made a bunch of 3 in 2022 playoffs. He was awesome. He made a bunch of 3s.
And this is why people who love Maxi stick with Maxi,
because it's just an archetype of player that's like it's perfect. Like every NBA team wants a player like Maxi. Do they actually want Maxi? That's another discussion. That's another topic, because we've seen him go through his ebbs and flows, his slumps, his health history has been up and down for the last 3 years, to say the least. But when he's on, he's one of the most valuable role players in the NBA because he's that mythical shooting, stretch, switchy, role-playing big that just, you know, what are the Clippers bigs, like their backup big was Mason Plumlee, who went 1 of 6 in 16 minutes. And then that's it. That, you know, they play Zubac, who's good, but more traditional paint big. Yeah. Like teams just don't have guys like that. And then when Maxi's playing the 4 and not playing the 5, and it's like you can't take advantage of the – like, you know, if the Mavericks are going big and the Clippers are a smaller kind of finesse team and they still can't use their quickness to get – you know, to take advantage of this big bully ball, like, what are you going to do? Like, you're toast. Like, you're going into the – if you get by Lively in a pick and roll and you're going in the lane and there's Maxi, like, that's just – that's a tough proposition.
Well, the key trick for Maxey has always been making sure his minutes are in a particular range and making sure you're not asking him to do too much physically with those minutes. Right. When they play him in a small ball five, there's got to the other. I don't necessarily like Kidd's response that it's for offensive spacing, but when you're playing, like they played him some PJ, like the PJ minutes are obviously like by and large pretty good, but I like seeing him with another big out there. I just do. Cause he comes up and helps and it's nice. I'm very pleased with it. I hope that this sort, you know, obviously you can't expect Maxey to hit. I would like Maxey to hit a three a game. If he goes one of four, but he takes four threes, fine. It's the stuff where he's just auto rotating the ball and refusing to do anything. I mean, whoever gave him a new toe, shout out to that guy. Big fan of that. Maxey's just been very important. Who else here is worth, you know, we already talked about Derek Jones Jr. God, Kyrie.
By the way, if he's going to keep scoring, like, good luck. Like, Jones, by the way, had 12. Mm-hmm. What did he have last game? I think he had 16. Like,
yeah.
The Clippers aren't guarding him. And if he's going to score, like, he's been, good grief. Did you know he's been double figures in the last four games?
I did. He's That's been, huge. It's why the two losses are annoying because you're getting...
Because him scoring is a bonus because they're not guarding him. So if he's punishing that kind of defense, like that's just cherry on top of the sundae.
Yeah, it's something. So then you can kind of keep going through, folks. We're getting a little late in the hour. Shout out to Josh Green, who in the span of three possessions, he bricked a open corner three from the left side off of the top of the backboard. Then proceeds to bury a corner three from the opposite side. While I don't know, I don't think he saw the basket.
I don't think so either.
Plumlee just destroyed him. Like that looked like a middle school foul where people are out of control. And I don't like because he knocked Josh Green all the way into the bench. And that three pointer ended up being a 4-point play. Was just a momentum killer for the Clippers because they were on a 9-2 run. That was pretty neat to see. Shout out to Josh. He is a guy. Sorry, my internet died for a second. Josh Green is a guy who we have an interesting relationship with. His defense tonight was made me laugh out loud a few times because he just was like escorting guys to the rim, but. Momentum killing back breaking threes. High five, Josh Green. I need to know why he and Dwight Powell have these evil mustaches. They look like evil Spock. It's just I need to understand it. It's not the look for me. Before we clear out, then I shout out to AJ Lawson and then Jaden Hardy. Jaden Hardy scored more points than James Harden in his 6 minutes.
Jaden Hardy doubled up James Harden and he only played 6 minutes.
Just a fucking high. Like if you are a Jaden Hardy fan, you are going to be yelling at people with those highlights and for the rest of time. Like it was great. It was just a great capper of a performance. Was really pleased with that one. Hardy's also a guy that's gone through a tough time on this particular show, but it's really fun to see guys, you know, do something with the minutes that they have.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was fun.
Well, do you have anything else before we get out of Dodge?
No, I don't think so. Other than, you know, just repeating and emphasizing that this transformation into this team being a defensive team that doesn't need threes to win, but obviously they made 14 tonight and that was kind of, you know, that was like nice. But that they win by 30. Like, you know, if they weren't making their threes, they would have still won this game by like 12 or 15. Like it's just weird to watch. They're a defensive team. We've talked about it all series, so I hate to beat a dead horse, but it's just a wild transformation to witness.
Well, and so I'm not sure, you know, these are when I do kind of one-off shows, and you always have the ability to do one-off shows, but you haven't done one in several years. But I talked with friend of the show, Rob Mahoney, yesterday. And that was, if you guys, if there's anybody listening to this who hasn't heard that conversation, we talked about his article that he wrote 3 days before the trade deadline with hindsight in mind, because his article was very much like laying out the future Maverick blueprint as the Mavericks front office saw it. So being able to read that and then have the context of the trades that they've made, like we didn't really talk about PJ Tucker tonight. He was pretty ho-hum on the box score, but played pretty fantastic defense, I think, for much of the game. And it's just like you've talked about this over and over and over again. The Mavericks are a such a different team than where they started out with. And I, you know, I don't want to be too bullish because they need to win one more game, but I'm really excited about the possibility of them playing another team in the second round. Like I they're just a physicality wins out in the playoffs. It just does by and large. So
yeah, and we've been talking about since they drafted Luka, their only way to win games was to make threes, and that's gone. And lo and behold, they're looking pretty good right now.
So, yeah, go listen to that pod if you guys haven't. Everybody who is here in the live show, go ahead and stick around here. We're going to be doing our secondary show where you can come talk a little ball with me. Let me know what you liked, what you didn't. We're going to let Josh go to sleep. This has been Kirk and Josh here for Pod Maverick After Dark. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And those of you who are listening on the audio stream, look for the Mavs party to be posted at some point on Thursday afternoon. We will be right back.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.